Welcome to this podcast for St. Peter's Church Greenhill, as we seek to become loving, witnessing and growing people.
I don't know if you've ever had that experience where you're telling a story, recounting some events that have happened to you with another person, and that other person is there in the room and interrupts you telling the story and says, "No, you're telling the story wrong." I don't know if you've ever had that. It particularly happens in married couples, I've noticed, where one person is telling a story and they're going to go, "No, you're telling it wrong." I've had the privilege of spending some time with some friends over this weekend and with Philippa. And, you know, stories are being told. It's been a while since we've hung out together. Stories are being told and Philippa has started to interrupt my stories and say, "Ned, you're telling it wrong. Oh, no, you've missed out this bit. Why are you not telling this bit?" And it's not because I'm telling the story wrong. And it's not that Philippa is going to tell the story wrong. It's just that we, as human beings, are people who have different perspectives. That when we experience the same event, we see it slightly different. And it's because we are what I want to call storified creatures, i.e. we are a species that exists for story. We understand the world in which we live through narratives. We tell ourselves stories about ourselves, about the world, and those stories have been created by our family, by our circumstance, by our experiences, by culture at large. It helps us to understand why things happen and to make sense of the world, to try and navigate it. And so when we tell stories, it says something about us, about how we tell stories, of what we focus on, what we prioritize when we're telling a narrative, because we'll notice things that are more significant to us than other events or other parts of the story. And that just betrays, as it were, our values and our priorities. What I've noticed in the difference between Philippa telling a story and me telling the same story, the differences highlight that Philippa structures all of her experiences through shifts in emotions. So she will emphasize how it made her feel, and therefore the reason that she's telling the story is because her emotions changed in some way, either for the better or for the worse. And that's the point of the story. So she's telling all these facts, all these events, but really she's trying to tell you that she's had this experience of the fluctuations of her emotions. Whereas I tell stories for a punchline, either a comic punchline or a dramatic punchline. And I have the point of the story in mind, and I will only say the things that are going to lead up to giving that big reveal. It's like a magic trick to me. Telling a story is like a magic trick, where you suddenly go, all of those things were of import because, ta-da, this is the story. And so when I'm telling the story, Philippa and Sarah did it before me, and other people, friends, say, "You're missing out these points." And for me, I'm like, that's not important. Because if I told every detail of it, it would get lost. The punchline would lose its point. And then there's no point in telling the story, in my opinion. Well, I'm telling you all of this because we have these stories of Jesus. And the three Gospels, which are called the Synoptic Gospels, because they can be put alongside each other, they're very similar. Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And they tell, on the whole, the same stories, the same events in Jesus' life. But there are differences to how they tell the story. And what we, as readers, can often do is one of two things. Either we push and smush all the stories together and we kind of go, oh, they're the same thing. And so when we hear one account of it, we kind of add in all the other stories if we know them. Or we do the opposite, which is we really focus so much on the differences that we sort of dismiss the other versions of it. I'm going, or we sort of say, oh, this probably didn't happen. And so, therefore, we don't need to pay attention to the details, etc. It's not really about that. I think both are wrong. We have to try and somehow hold these stories to know that they did happen. Just people saw them differently and want to show something different, interpret the story differently because of their culture, because of the context, because of the situation in which they're telling the story. For example, when I tell stories, I'm very aware of the audience and I want to know what the punchline's going to land on. This story, the calming of the storm, is told in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and they tell them ever so slightly different. The facts of the story remain the same. The disciples and Jesus get into a boat. Jesus falls asleep. There is a storm. The disciples wake Jesus up. Jesus commands the wind and the waves to stop. The winds and the waves stop, and everyone's amazed. That's the facts of the story. In all three stories, that is what is said. However, the difference with the Luke account that we've just heard, compared with Matthew and Mark, is quite significant and I think quite helpful for us at St. Peter's at this time. In Mark's account of this story, which is by far the longest version of the story, he adds a whole load of details in it, partly because he probably got his account from Peter, who was there, so Peter told him a whole load of stuff, and Mark wants to put in all these details, must be for a particular reason, because Matthew and Luke don't put those details in. But Mark adds all these details, but in particular, he has the disciples facing the storm, and that's the point of the story. How the disciples handle the storm is the point of the story. And the fact that they have to ask Jesus for help is something that we can learn from. So, in the Mark's account, the disciples call Jesus teacher. They say, "Teacher, teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" Jesus is presented as a teacher. They ask him a question for him to respond. They don't know the answer. They, therefore, might be seen as failing or needing to learn something. This storm story is a teachable moment. It's a learning objective. In Matthew's Gospel, a similar thing. It's about the disciples and how they face the storm, and Jesus is there to teach them. So in Matthew's Gospel, the disciples are very scared when the storm comes. And it says they are scared of the storm. And they wake Jesus up. And they say, "Lord, Lord, save us, for we are perishing." This sense of just absolute fear. And that's what is presented. And after Jesus calms the storm, he turns to the disciples and he says, "You of little faith, why were you afraid?" You of little faith. This sense of, you got it wrong. And the point of the story is the disciples were still needing to learn. It's a big theme in Matthew's Gospel particularly, that the disciples continually need to learn and to grow. Those are absolutely fine as narrative points, because sometimes we face storms and they do teach us something. They teach us about ourselves, they teach us about Jesus, they teach us about our faith, and that's great. However, Luke's account of this story doesn't seem to be about the disciples and how afraid they are of the storm. The disciples, in fact, sort of play a backseat role in it. Because the main point of Luke's gospel account of this story is that Jesus faces the storm. That it's about Jesus and what he is able to do and what he does in this story. And in it, the disciples call Jesus Master. They say, "Master, Master, we are perishing." That's all they say. Jesus wakes up, he calms the storm, and all he says to them is, "Where was your faith?" And that's it. There's no teaching moment, there's no classroom scene in the boat where Jesus goes, "Now you guys, you of little faith, what were you doing? Why were you afraid?" and all those sorts of things. There's none of that. There's no teachable moment in this. This is just The disciples facing a storm, asking for Jesus' help, and Jesus is able to help. Calm the storm. Face up to what it is. The other really interesting thing about Luke's account, which is ever so slightly subtle, and it's a really intricate way of using a word. In both the other accounts, the storm arises. It's sort of like the storm happens as it does. In this Luke's account, the storm comes down. Comes down. It's a sort of oppression. It feels like this sort of spiritual attack. Rather than just the storm happened and they got afraid, this is the storm swept down. It's this sort of big cosmic thing that's going on. And I know that that's the case because elsewhere in Luke's gospel, Jesus is continually presented as facing up to the forces of darkness, demonic forces. In fact, after this story, in Luke's account of the demoniac where he exercises them into pigs, if you remember that bit, if you know the story, he faces it and it's exactly the same structure of the story. So the storm is seen as this sort of demonic force of chaos and uncertainty and anxiety and everything. And Jesus faces up to it because he is the fighter for good. He is the one that comes and faces up to the forces of darkness. Those things that oppress us, he's come to set us free from them. That's a big theme in Luke and in Acts of the Apostles as well. So this story is not about, in Luke's account, disciples failing and needing to learn something. It is about Jesus being able to defend us, to help us, to save us from dark forces and the chaos of this world. And rightly so. I wonder, when listening to this story in the past, perhaps you have, how many of you have thought about the second question, which I have often asked, is what were the disciples meant to do? You know, if we feel at the end of the story, oh yeah, the disciples, they didn't really do what they should do. Jesus was disappointed in them. Jesus wanted them to learn something, to know something. What was it that they were meant to do? Were they meant to still the storm? Is that what we were, as disciples, is that what faith is about? To be able to stand up and command the wind and the waves to stop? It doesn't sound like that's feasible, really. It's sort of the similar thing with Peter walking on water. Often we're told, when people preach on it, that Peter should have walked on water. And that we all, if we have faith, can walk on water. Well, I don't know if you've tried that. But I've never succeeded in it. So am I a failure as a disciple for not walking on water? Or for not being able to calm the storm? That can't be what Jesus is expecting. That can't be the teachable moment. In Luke's account, we don't ask that question. It just seems like it's reasonable. But we might hear the disappointment in Jesus when we hear it because we conflate the story. Don't conflate the story. All that is said is that they say, Master, Master, we are perishing. He gets up. He responds by doing something, by helping them. And then he says, where was your faith? Where was your faith? Disciples. What does that mean? What is he asking? I think if we take away the fear of the disciples before the storm, which Luke doesn't raise, he doesn't talk about the fear of the storm, he doesn't say that they're frightened of the storm, they just say that they wake Jesus up and say, we're perishing. Jesus says, where is your faith? It could quite reasonably be a question of, what were you expecting? What did you want me to do? Can't do it in the heat of the storm. Can't go, as the storm's raging, what are you wanting me to do? He calms it and goes, right, was that what you wanted? Did you believe that I could do that? And they were amazed. Probably not. Don't know what they were expecting Jesus to do. Not all storms are teachable moments. And this is where it lands for us at St. Peter's. Because there might be fear amongst you about what's going to happen when I go, when I leave. How are you going to navigate the storms together as a people? It might feel like you have been left, that it's down to you guys now to do everything. That might be what you're feeling, whether you acknowledge that or not. A sense that you are being abandoned, perhaps, and left to it for a time, maybe until my replacement comes, or maybe even after that, you don't know. Maybe you're feeling this sort of fear of, and the pressure and the responsibility. It's all down to us now. What happens when the storms come? Which, by the way, they will. They always do. What are you to do? I think this story, and particularly this account, helps us to reflect on what is our domain. What's our lane? What is our responsibility? Where is it that we should step up in a storm? When God tells us to do something particular in a storm, when it's our job to respond in some way. Whether that is holding out hope, proclaiming the gospel, praising in the storms of life. But there will be storms when you're expected to do nothing because you can do nothing. The right response, no matter how you're seeing the storm, whether it is a teachable moment or it is not, the right response is to wake Jesus up and to ask for his help. That is not a failure. That is not a dereliction of duty. Jesus is not going to be disappointed with you if you say to him, "Hey, Jesus, look at what's happening. Help us." That's a good instinct to have. No matter how you see the story in hindsight, when you look back at the storm, you're going to go, "Oh, yeah, I learned a lot in that storm. I'm grateful that Jesus was there." Or if you look back and went, "That was just messy. That was absolutely pointless as a storm. But at least Jesus was there. And I knew that I could pray to him." The only failure would be if you stopped praying and you stopped asking. That would be the only failure and the only disappointment that you should feel. The other reason that I think it's a really helpful story is because in the three gospel accounts, Jesus is called something different. So in Matthew's gospel, he's called teacher because Matthew wants to emphasize discipleship and learning. That's his point. Mark's account, it's Lord. Lord, save us. In this, it's master. It's a different Greek word. It's only used in Luke. Master. Sorry for the Greek, but it is just helpful to bring it into context. The Greek word is epistasis, which means to stand over. Epi meaning over, and stasis meaning to stand. So someone who stands over. It is not episkopoi, which is oversight. Jesus is not in the position of oversight. He is an overstander, a person who stands boldly over everything. Oversight means that you have a vision over things. It's where we get the word bishop. Don't get me into why I think oversight ministry is a bad name. Don't get me into that. Anyway, Jesus is not the oversight minister. Jesus is Lord, he is teacher, and he stands over all of us, over everything. He's not in amongst us working alongside us, although he is, but he's ultimately seen as the person who has authority over it. When you get my replacement, the end of the year or beginning of next year or whenever it is, they will come in and they will have particular jobs, which only they should and can do. The rest of you do have jobs. You already have the jobs. You've got domains, you've got responsibilities, you've got possibilities of being active. We're going to explore where you might fit within the body of Christ over the next few weeks. But there will be things which you just can't do and you shouldn't do. It's not your responsibility. You should look to one another when the storms come. Look and see if there are people being asked to stand by the Lord, being asked to do something, whatever it is. When the storm comes, maybe it's just to batten down the hatches, or to keep everyone calm and to say, it's fine, we're all safe. Or maybe your job is to get rid of the water out of the boat. Whatever the job is, the Lord will instruct you. You should do that. Don't reject that call. But there will be the jobs which only an oversight minister can do. But there will even be jobs which the oversight minister can't do. But I tell you who can. Jesus. In all of those roles, in whatever situation it is, however you see the storm, pray, Master, we're perishing. I faced many storms in my life. The worst one by a country mile is when Sarah died. It just rocked me to such a hideous place. I could not see God. I could not hear God. I was blind. I was so in chaos. I didn't know where to look. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't make basic decisions. And at times, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how I was going to navigate a day, let alone an hour or a minute. All I knew what to do was I should pray. But I didn't know how to pray. I didn't know what to pray. I had no words. I didn't even know whether God was there. Such was the shaking of this storm. All I was able to do at times was to pray a simple, but I think a powerful prayer. Help me. That's it. Sometimes storms are so severe, all you can say is, help me. Master, I'm perishing. Help me. There are other storms where it was tumultuous, it was painful. There was doubt. I had a whole load of internal battles going on of how I should respond, etc., etc. And in those, I knew that God was with me. I think he was asleep, but I knew he was there. And there were times when I knew what I should do. That, do you know what? God has set me a task. I'm just going to carry on doing this until he wakes up, and then he'll do something amazing. There are other times in that, whilst I was doing those tasks, I was thinking, this is getting too much. And then I turned to God and I said, God, help me. Teach me. What do I need to do? And he did. And he calmed the storm well beyond what I could do, because I couldn't do anything. Both of those storms, yes, one was a teachable moment. Another was just awful. It was just pointless. It was just a facing of evil and darkness in the world. They come. Death happens. Devastation, where there's no meaning to it. It's absolutely meaningless. It's not a teachable moment. God, it's not a necessary thing for God to teach you and to grow you in your faith. That's a sick kind of God, and I don't want to preach that. But God is still present in both those storms. He's still able to turn to him and say, we're perishing. We're struggling here. Help. And you will not be disappointed. You will not have failed. You'd have succeeded. So as you go into this uncertain time and you face storms, which you will, together as a people, know that you are not abandoned. You have one another. You have tasks that you can do. The Lord is calling you to be a part of his body, to have a role and a function, to have a place amongst one another. You will not have someone to oversee at this point. You'll have people who are slightly distant from you, area deans and people in the mission partnership and things like that. But actually on the ground for the vacancy, there will be a need for you to make decisions amongst yourselves. But I tell you, the person who's not abandoned you and will never abandon you and is always there standing over it all is Jesus. He may feel like he's asleep, but he can be woken up. He can be woken up when you pray without ceasing. Master, Master, we are perishing. That is the prayer. That is the response to the storm. And when my replacement comes, whoever they are, they will be a part of this family. Just as I have been. Because I have been overseeing other churches whilst I've been here. You've not probably noticed very much. But sometimes I'm busy thinking about other things. And then I come and I keep an eye over this church family. The oversight minister will be the same. They'll do it differently, of course. They'll be a different person. But when they come, the same will be true. You will still need to make decisions amongst yourselves. That will be appropriate in some cases. In other cases, the storm will be too much. But you have not been abandoned, and you turn to prayer. Master, Master, we are perishing. That is the response to the storm, whatever it is, and however you see it.